Hello and welcome to the Two Time Labs podcast. This is Francis Wade and welcome to another, you know, regular series of conversations with thought leaders in the area of time management. And this week I have a consultant and also a colleague. His name is Tony Murphy and he's calling in from Great Britain. And he's with Time Diagnostics. Tony, welcome to Two Time Labs podcast.
Good evening and good afternoon and good morning, whichever time zone everybody's in.
Well said. Here in Jamaica, it's about 12 o'clock. So
we're just finishing the end of our working day.
We're supposed to be in the midst of it. But what can I tell you? It's a summer. It's been very hot. And I understand you have very good weather up there. Are you in London?
Well, just outside London, a place called Hartford. Yeah, we're about 20 minutes north of London. So yeah, it's a lovely day today.
Excellent. Well, I was scouting around your background and I saw that we have something in common. We both actually worked for telecoms. I noticed you had a lot of background in working for British Telecom. Was that BT?
Yeah, I worked for BT for a long time. Also worked in the mobile industry as well. Yeah, I've got about 30 years under my belt now. Getting people connected and making their lives more hectic.
Wow, and how did you make the transition over to time diagnostics and time intelligence and time management and everything time related?
Ooh, it's hard to know where that story starts, but I think at work I was managing teams and leading teams, and I found that was where I got my biggest kicks in developing people, basically, and moving them on. So I got interested in coaching. I did an NLP course, an NLP practitioner, a master practitioner, and then coach, and sort of carried that through. And I continued during that time. I was still working in the telecoms industry and doing consultancy work for people. And I've kind of segued into the time diagnostics thing. The business itself was set up one lunchtime by myself and my business partner. We were looking at businesses.
Really?
Yeah, one lunchtime. we were looking at businesses to start up, or something that we could do together, and we figured that time was the single biggest problem that people had, really. No one ever has enough time, and if they do have too much time, they don't know what to do with it.
Yes.
So from that premise, we started our business.
Is that right? Because, you know, I was fascinated because you take a very research-oriented and research-driven approach. And when I went to your site, I actually thought that the research was what was the original sort of activity, and that became a business. But it sounds like you formed a business, and then did you go looking for applicable research afterwards?
I wish we had. We started off trying to do our own.
Wow.
And we developed our own questionnaire and our own instrument. And actually, we didn't spend too much time. We didn't waste too much time doing that. Okay, so, yeah, we found two people. One was a woman called Ilona Bonniewell, who was actually almost a neighbour of mine at the time. She lived about a mile away from where I did. And she's done a lot of research on time perspective and well-being and positive psychology. She started a European course in positive psychology about 7 or 8 years ago, I think. She's one of the sort of principal people in Europe on positive psychology. And the other person was a guy called Philip Zimbardo, who you may have heard of. He's probably the most famous living psychologist in the world. He's famous for the Stanford Prison Experiment.
Oh.
You heard of that one?
Oh, that one I've heard of, yes. Can't quote it, but was it a time management study, or was this the one where they lock people up and then applied electric shocks?
That's the one.
Lovely.
It wasn't the electric shocks. It's about the way prisoners and guards, the people were assigned roles in an experiment. Wouldn't be allowed these days because of the ethics.
Right. They became like Nazis. Right?
That's right. Like, yeah, evil. The guards beat up the prisoners and the prisoners rebelled. And
they had to They had to cut it short because it was becoming sadistic.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Wonderful.
But he's less well known, but an equal area of research and of interest for him is on time perspective.
Okay. And
this is the sort of original part of it, really, the bit that not many people have come across, but we think is actually vital for an understanding of how people behave with time. And your time perspective really predicts how you're going to spend your time.
Oh, I just Googled it. So I'm looking here at and he has a number of survey instruments, it seems.
Yes, yeah. There's a number of different instruments. The main ones are 56 questions, which then works out of your five different time perspectives. And the research is a really thorough going. It's been going, I think, since 1987, certainly the late 80s. There's a lot of people doing it. There's like a core of students across the world who are doing, of postgraduate students who are doing it across the world, and a lot of undergraduates underneath them.
Interesting. So did you select these two researchers to form the basis of your work after doing sort of an exhaustive search?
it wasn't exhaustive. It seemed to be the two leading lights in the fields that interested us. It was particularly the time perspective, the Zimbardo stuff. And Ilona had done a couple of joint papers with Zimbardo on relating time perspective to positive psychology and how time satisfaction, positive time use, increases your well-being and reduces stress.
Oh, interesting. So, and I know you've taken I guess these papers and then turned them into the time diagnostic approach. Yes.
Yeah. We've got the Zimbardo instrument. We've got Ilona's, which looked at the other four aspects. So that's motivation, planning, execution, and reflection. Time to stop and think. Mm-hmm. We added those instruments together and came up with what we call the Time Intelligence Report, which is an online questionnaire. It takes you about 20 minutes to fill in, and then the output from that is a report which tells you how you're doing. It gives you a picture of your time perspective, quite literally. It gives you a diagram of your time perspective. Maybe we'll talk about a bit more about what those different perspectives are in a minute.
Yes.
And then tells you different aspects of motivation, planning, execution, and reflection, and kind of looks at your strengths and weaknesses and how to work, and gives some tips as well on how to work on both.
Sure. Why don't you jump right into letting us know what time intelligence is about and the different aspects of, I guess, skills that somewhat tense perspective, right, that one has.
So time perspective is kind of how you're hardwired for time in the first place. We all like to hang out in different parts of time, if you like. So and Zimbardo found that there were five principal areas. Two in the present, which were present hedonism and present fatalism. A present hedonist is those party people who live for today and don't really think about too much about the consequences of their actions, but they're great to be with. Present fatalistic, they don't feel like they have control over their own destiny. They feel like someone else is in charge of their life. Then you have future, which is future. People who defer gratification. They'll put off pleasure today for investing in the future. So their behaviours would be something like, "No, I can't come out tonight because I've got to get this paper out." Or they floss their teeth. They buy insurance. They take all these sort of preventative measures because they think about the future. And then the past, we've got two flavors of the past, past positive and past negative. which are what they say, really. Past positive people have a warm, nostalgic feeling about the past. They like to look through old photograph albums. They like to tell stories and listen to stories about the past and think about the good old days and how things ain't like they used to be anymore. Mm. Past negative, people tend to ruminate on the negative parts of their past and dwell on what went wrong in the past. Of course, they bring that to the future with them. That's the whole thing about this, is that their behavior, they bring that to the present. Their behavior in the present is informed by their attitudes to these five different dimensions.
Wow. Man, I could see that if you're one type, you might, and you discover that your fiancé, for example, is another type, you might be thinking, I don't know, I'm a past positive person, and she's kind of present hedonistic, and I don't know if the two go well together.
Well, we're all a little bit of each, so it's not, you know, it's a kind of, we do it in a kind of spider diagram, which is difficult to explain in words, but the picture is, it's like a stretched pentagram in different dimensions. So you'll get, there isn't anyone who doesn't think about any of the future, but you know, that it's a question of degrees. And you definitely do get partnerships where one person is good at looking at the future and another is better at doing that present stuff and doing the past. I can think of many couples that I know who'd fit into that category. And then there's the ones that don't get on so well together as well. The thing that we're interested in is people at work, of course, and how all of those different types of people have to get on and work. And I mean, there are whole professions which are based in past. The legal profession, for example,
right,
is all based on case history and past cases going
like
back.
Past negative.
Well, yeah.
It sounds pretty bad, huh?
Well, they're making a living out of it, but how do they then think strategically? How do they think about the future? It's not in their, at the moment, it's not in their DNA makeup. And that's one of the things that we work with people on, is to get them to kind of stretch that. First of all, they have to be aware of their time perspective in the first place, and then stretch in different dimensions so that it becomes more balanced. So yeah, I mean, accountancy as well. I was reading an article the other day lamenting the fact that many CFOs found it difficult to think strategically because they're used to looking in the rearview mirror to manage the company. But, you know, they're always looking right at historical figures to manage the company.
And right. That sounds like past negative again.
It could be past positive, couldn't it? But it means that they're not as equipped to deal with the future and think strategically, because they're habitually looking in the past.
Right. Their job is to look at the numbers of what's already happened,
which by definition just have already happened. Yeah, maybe some forecasting, but not in the strategic way that a CEO might be thinking, for example, where they're thinking about 3 years ahead, 5 years ahead, that kind of thing.
Right. I'm trying to figure out which one I am. I think I might be some blend of future and past positive, I think.
I from what I know of you, I wouldn't be at all surprised that would be right, and probably some present hedonism as well. Don't knock present hedonism, because you know, they're nice people to be with. They can be, we can be, I should say, because I fit into that category. We can be, you know, a bit flighty and tend to move from one thing to another and not plan very well. But on the other hand, we tend to be fun to be with at the time. I'm a coach. I need to be present with my clients. So it's a skill that works well for me in my profession.
Yeah, I can imagine that if you're if I had you as a coach, I'd prefer you to be. It depends on the situation, I guess. But if you were sort of very, very positive and very encouraging and very present, as you said, and very optimistic.
Yeah, you need to be. You always need to be present, and
right.
And it depends on the client. You know what other elements you bring to bear, because they might also be looking at the other aspects of the time intelligence report as well, like motivation, because you can't really. Okay, you know, all right, you're hardwired for certain types of time perspective, but unless you've got that engine of motivation, where are you going to go? Unless you understand what motivates you, you know, where, how are you going to power yourself to where you want to get to?
Okay, so the idea is you take a test, you figure out what your diagram looks like. You have elements of all five, but I guess you have a strength in one or two.
Yes.
Or a spike, and then you look to see, I guess, how does your profile help you in your, or how does it account for your success and your failures in life? I guess working with other people, being at home with your spouse, I imagine, and also I guess what kind of jobs you want to aspire to in the future, because if you're a CFO, like you said, and you're past negative, then you probably need to develop your future component, like you said. And then do you have exercises to develop the capacities in these five areas?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, there are some, they're quite well known in the positive psychology circle. So there's one called, for example, the gratitude exercise, where you think about people who've influenced you in the past, or not just influenced, but who've had a big input into the person that you are at the moment, in a mm-hmm. positive sense, and you go and say thanks to them, and you tell them how much they've affected you, and you give gratitude, you give thanks to them in a way that, you know, is explicit and overt, rather than the one, I'm English and we tend to be very reserved.
Right. Like they know I'm grateful. Or
that's it.
They already know. I don't need to say it.
Exactly.
Like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty interesting. And this is about being grateful in an overt sense, not in a sort of covert sense, like the guy who kicked you in the shins and you thanked him. Thanks a lot, buddy. That really helped you become a better person.
No, these are people,
jerks like you ever since then.
You know, we all had those teachers who we had a big influence and we never got the chance to say thanks to. And you don't, if you can't contact them again, you can write a letter. And that, so the effect that that has is increasing the positive past. It's the memories of the past and reinforcing that. And that, what that does is give you increased resilience for the future. It makes you literally a stronger person to bounce back from adversity, because you've got these positive reference points which you can always go back to.
Okay, so that's a practical way of building your past positive capacity, I guess.
Completely, yeah. And if we want to talk about the future, then we'll do perhaps a timeline type exercise where they think of their life as a line, and how far can you see at the moment, and then extend that line out so that their horizon that they're looking at is further out, and they can then start slotting in life events or plans into that time horizon. Lots of people don't think very far into the future.
So they tend to set small goals.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's really, you know, I work with companies through the strategic planning at times, and I have to work sometimes a little too hard to have them think of horizons that are decent enough for them to actually accomplish something other than business as usual.
Yeah, it's easy to do the business as usual, isn't it? But less comfortable to think of, and less comfortable for certain people in particular to think past this quarter, past the next quarter.
Yes. Yeah, you start to have people telling you, oh, that's not realistic. And then I have to start to tell them, yeah, but you can't become an industry leader by just looking at this quarter alone. It's going to take months and years to do that. And to do that, we have to plan that far ahead.
Yeah, you've got to move out that time horizon to somewhere where everyone is involved can see it and buy into it. And I think that often affects like change management programs, for example, where you've maybe got a visionary CEO who's leading people to this brave new world, and you know, there's a number of people who aren't quite on board with the program because it's not linked to the present or the past. Those people who are saying, oh, you know, this didn't work last time we tried it, or it's unrealistic.
That's negative.
You've got it.
Or, you know, what can you expect from management? They'll never ever do anything other than lie to us. That's like present fatalistic.
Yes, right? That's exactly it. You've got it. So, you know, you can predict who those naysayers are going to be in a change management program and deal with them. And that doesn't necessarily mean throwing them out the boat and still moving forward. You can use them in a positive way by scenario planning, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, what's the worst thing that can happen? What happened last time? We also have this technique called a pre-mortem. I don't know whether you've ever come across that before.
I've heard it, but is it like if this were to fail, what were the things that would have happened?
Yeah. So you start, you do this at a project inception, and then you imagine your project going disastrously wrong before it has gone wrong, and plan those scenarios out. So you get rid of that. The false optimism that you get at the beginning of a project where everyone rah, 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 and then and then 9 months later it's fizzled out and people are wondering where all the momentum went. So you do that in advance and, you know, you can check off some of the things that will go wrong. Well, that's a job for those people, for those fatalists and past negative people to do.
Oh, so and what happens in a team when everyone has done their diagnosis and they, you know, I know that you're a present fatalist and you know I'm a past positive, and what happens in a team when everyone knows everyone else's profile?
The knowledge is power. So first of all, knowing about yourself, you know, we're both into sort of self-development and personal development of other people, and any self-knowledge is always good. But when you know about your colleagues and their behaviors and motivations as well, that gives you, it doesn't give you power so much, but it gives you knowledge, doesn't it? It gives you a way to interact with them as well, because the conversations that you have when you know that you already know that somebody's ready to pick holes in it, you don't have to get defensive about your pet project. You could take those comments on the chin, knowing that they come from that kind of time perspective. This is how that person is wired, and that person themselves can change their perspective as well. It's not a complete given that's how I am and that's how I'll always be.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that you do have the power to change yourself by doing these kind of exercises that I was talking about before.
Interesting. And then will a team actually work on each person's weakness, for example?
Well, remember, this comes from positive psychology, so it's not just about working on your weaknesses, but it's also about working on your strengths and making your strengths better.
Okay.
It comes from a model of not one of disease, but of, so positive psychology comes from a model not of disease, that something's broken, but these are things that are good. Let's work on the things that are good. And maybe give the things that I'm not so good at someone else. So we look at the non-time perspective parts, like planning, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You may find that a colleague's better at planning than you are, and there are the different things you can do. You can either work on your own planning skills or say, look, I think you'd make a better job of this, and delegate it to them. Again, it's an informed choice rather than a predestined tablets of stone kind of thing.
Okay, so you're sort of playing to your strengths.
Play to strengths.
Is kind of what you're saying.
Yes.
Giving work out depending on who has what, you know,
who's
strong in what particular area.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then does the time intelligence test cover just these five outcomes: past negative, past positive, future present fatalistic, present hedonistic, or does it cover other traits as well?
There's subsets of time perspective.
Okay.
Which is one dimension. And there are four other dimensions, as well as time perspective, mm-hmm. which is motivation,
mm-hmm.
planning,
mm-hmm.
execution, and mm-hmm. reflection. So these are skills. So, for example, on the planning side, they'd be typically what we think of as time management mechanics type stuff, like to-do lists, prioritizing, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, normal time management things, they really only look at quite a small subset of this big time thing that we're looking at.
Okay, so I'm looking at your website, the time diagnostic inventory, is that the actual tool itself?
Yeah, we call it the time intelligence report now. The
time intelligence report. Okay, so when I do my report, it would cover... I know you sent me one to do, and I couldn't quite get into the website for some reason, for the way I tried to log in. I think my browser is kind of blocking it for some reason.
Okay, but, well, we need to fix that. You should do it.
Yeah, I should have tried a different browser, what I should have done. But the time intelligence report then covers the five areas of time perspective, gives it an idea of your spider diagram.
Yeah.
And then covers motivation, planning, execution, and evaluation as well.
Correct. That's correct. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So it's much broader than just the time perspective. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. The time perspective is kind of where we start from, but it's much broader. Yes.
Okay. Interesting. So a few more questions to ask you around this. Not sure which way to go next, because I was fascinated by a diagram that I saw on your website comparing time diagnostics with time management and seeing how they were different. But I also want to hear about motivation, planning, execution, and evaluation. Which one do you think makes sense for us to go into next?
Well, I think the reason we found common ground in the first place, I think, was that one-size-fits-none thing, which we both... You know, we both believe that, and I know that your last podcast as well was covering that.
Right.
One size doesn't fit all, and yet that's the way that most time management programs tend to take you. And I think, particularly in today's world, where people are looking for a more individual approach and a more, you know, nuanced idea about what they are. Then it's important to tailor things to individuals and not expect them to fit into a particular system or a particular way of being.
Right. It's fascinating to me that even if you think that everyone should follow the same thing, that you've given everyone an impossible task, which is to try to follow the same thing, because obviously we're not doing that. Right now.
No.
So to move us all to the point where we're all following the exact same set of behaviors is, you know, it's like that's more than a left. We don't have time for that.
Are you familiar with the Borg in Star Trek?
Yeah.
There you go. That's my my analogy for that time management one size fits all. But you'll end up like Borg, and who wants to be like that at work?
It just takes over everyone's mind and causes
resistance
us all to think
of the
collective. Resistance is futile, right, because it'll eventually take you over, so you just need to just
go with it, yes. Yeah, right.
Roll over and die right now.
Exactly. And many people we talk to have died those deaths, you know, that they've tried it, they've failed, and they feel like failures because they've failed in this ridiculous attempt to become like everybody else and become like this, like one particular guru who says that you should work in this way.
Yeah, because really that's what those books and programs are. They're the, you know, the gurus figured out, here's how I do it, and says, everyone follow me.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what it comes down to, because I've looked at the gurus I've looked at, not including you, Tony.
I'm not a guru.
Yeah, the other ones. The other ones, you know, I look for the research that they've done, yeah. Turn it to the back of their books. There's no research.
No, this worked for me. Why don't you try it?
Yeah, and there's also no sense that there ever will be any research, because they don't seem to, not all, but most, they don't seem to go past just follow me. And until I come up with something different for me, all you're stuck with is doing is trying to follow me. That's very different than what you're saying, which is do an in-depth diagnostic, and then from that diagnostic, make informed choices. Am I understanding you right?
That's precisely it, yeah. And what's more, the diagnostic tool will change. You know, it's not a fixed point in time, because knowledge about this will change as well. So we do try a scientific approach to all of it, and it's all, you know, subject to further research, and the research is ongoing at the moment. I went to a conference last year in Portugal. There were 150 people there, all doing research on time perspective, for example, and all bringing new knowledge to the field.
Really? You know, I've been searching for a time management conference, just one, to tap into around the world, and they just don't really exist, do they?
No. This isn't time management, it's time perspective. But
right, I understand.
But it is time management in the sense of, like I said, time perspective predicts how you're going to use your time.
Right.
If you don't do something else, if you don't make an intervention with yourself or with other people.
Right, if you don't come to a fuller knowledge and then adapt accordingly,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about the other parts of the time intelligence report, the other four parts: motivation, planning, execution, and evaluation.
Okay.
Let's take motivation first.
Motivation. So that's
interesting. Yeah.
That's the engine that drives you. Why do you get up in the morning? What makes you want to do the things you do? And indeed, do you want to do the things that you're doing? So being a coach, this is a kind of a standard point of attack for any coach, really, is, you know, why are you doing this? And what do you want to do differently? And then move people towards what they want to do differently.
And do they use the time perspectives in order to sort of set a new vision for themselves?
They use the time, the whole report, the motivation section of the report will show them where they're maybe lacking in certain aspects of motivation or not. You know, that might not be the issue. It might be one of the other angles that we look at.
Okay, so it's sort of you're sort of asking them, how badly do you want to change, or how much do you want to change, and do you have a sense of where you want to be 2 years from now in terms of your time intelligence?
Exactly, yeah? Exactly. One of my favorite questions as a coach is, what do you want to do when you grow up? Regardless of the age of anybody, and it's kind of asking you. Questions which get you to think about that, or are you doing what you want to do already? You know, when you go, is this the thing that you, is this your life's mission that you're working on there, or is it just a job to get you by, to bring in a salary? And do you want to follow your life's mission, or are you happy with that, just doing that job?
When someone discovers their time perspective. And you know where they are in the five dimensions. What are some of the goals that they set for themselves based on that knowledge?
I think, first of all, they can set goals. They will set goals now, because many people won't do that, or are not equipped with the tools to do that, or the time horizon. You know, you were talking about small goals before. If you can expand your time horizon, you can set bigger goals. So
right.
I can maybe start thinking about my legacy to my children and my children's children and the whole of humanity to make it really, really big. Not just what I want to do by this time next year.
Okay.
So, and that's time management.
That's an easy one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's time management in the really, really big sense of the word, isn't it? It's life management.
Mm-hmm. It's life management at that
beyond
point.
Beyond that, yeah. Which is all part of time management. That's how we, you know, we make up our lives by 1 hour at a time, 5 minutes at a time.
If I do the report, I find out that time fatalistic, for example, and you know, it's like, oh my God, I had no idea, but it explains everything. It's true. I don't want to be time fatalistic. Do you give someone a sort of a pathway to be less time fatalistic and to balance out with somebody? Could I set a goal for myself that has to do with a better balance between the different dimensions?
Yeah, there I think we'd be just looking at your self-talk. So,
okay,
getting you to amend your self-talk so that you were more, you got to actually think that you're driving the bus, not some unseen force, forces of evil. And it might involve acknowledging your own agency in past events, or noting what you're doing at the moment. You know, it's an ongoing experiment on yourself.
So you've got to be really good to skillful then to work with someone who has done the report, because the kinds of activities that, or A, the kind of goals they could set, and B, the kind of activities that they might want to undertake to next in order to accomplish those goals could pull from many, many different disciplines, from what I hear you saying.
They do, yeah, they do. And it's, I mean, there's even just the tools, for example. I've had clients in the past who, just using a time planner with everything, showing everything in front of them, that's massively changed their lives. So it can be in the mechanics of time. It can be in the sort of psychology side of it. It is quite ranging, although it doesn't feel hard to do with people. It's still just a coaching conversation.
This is what the guru says.
It's not hard.
No, not a guru. Not a guru.
Yeah. Because, you know, by the way, listening into our conversation is probably a bunch of time management trainers, coaches, consultants, and professional organizers. Time advisors, people who advise other people with respect to their time management or time intelligence skills. So I imagine they're listening and they're laughing along and saying, oh my God, this is no easy business.
How would I ever do that?
Yeah, because with an in-depth analysis, such as the one that you just described, the time intelligence report, and, you know, asking, you know, getting a client to set some, all of a sudden, you know, some pretty interesting or challenging goals based on this new knowledge. You know, it's not the ordinary coach who could say, yeah, sure, I'll help you with your self-talk. You know, a lot of time advisors would be like, what? I gotta work with them on their what?
Well, time is psychological.
No, I want to show them how to organize a to-do list. What are you talking about?
Time is psychological. It's in here. And I think that's one of the big differences. Time happens in here, and it's not something out there that I can file away and organize. It is a little bit, but that's not really what it's all about. It's about that, those psychological aspects. On the other hand, everyone will always talk to you about time. So it's an easy... The report itself is an easy way into any coaching conversation to talk about time. It's one of those things where people will always confess their weaknesses to you. Many people will say, you know, I procrastinate. And it's okay. You know, it's not a terrible admission there, or I'm always late for meetings. So it's an easy way into any sort of self-development. It's not a... It's not a big step for people to take.
Again, this is the voice of experience. I feel like I need to put a warning on that for people listening.
Well,
the experienced expert says, the rest of us got to scratch our heads. Because the truth is, you're going way past time mechanics into the psychology of time management. right?
That's the truth. Yes. Yeah. Because that's where it starts. It's not about, to-do lists. It's not just about to-do lists and prioritizing, which is what most time management courses and things would have you believe. It's a small part of it. And we don't dismiss that. We do look at the mechanical part of it. But it's how you have time organized in your head and how you've learned to deal with it through your life so far.
I'm going to come back to this question of time being psychological in a minute, but take us through planning. Let's do planning first, and then we'll come back to that much bigger question. I noticed from your site it says that planning has to do with decision making, whether it's cognitive or emotional.
Oh yeah. Oh.
Tell me.
That's a can of worms. On the planning thing, first of all, we do look. This is the bit where we do look at the standard time mechanics, things like to-do lists, and what do you do in those 10 minutes that you're waiting for at the dentist's or something. You know, have a notebook, have something that you can fill in that dead time with. So there's the kind of easy time mechanics, but the way we think we make decisions. That's about rationalizing something you've decided about already, either individually or collectively. Mm-hmm. We've all been in those meetings where you already know what the decision is,
mm-hmm.
either because the guy leading it's already decided or it's kind of obvious, but you have to make up these reasons about why you made the decision post the event. And so it's about understanding that where those things are coming from, that they're coming from inside, not inside the system, whether it's you as a system or the collective system of the company or the working unit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're not rational, well thought out, backed up by loads of data type decisions most of the time.
Understood. And so we fool ourselves into thinking we're rational creatures, and in fact, we're anything but, no?
I know I do, and I suspect everyone else does as well.
Put myself in that boat also. I like to think that I don't, but... tell us about execution, which is the fourth.
Execution is just getting on with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, classic time management... You'll get titles about getting things done and achieving more and being productive, but other than in mechanical terms, about you put it top of your to-do list and then make sure it's the first thing that you do. But there's lots of different reasons why people will procrastinate, why they don't just get on with things, and they're all psychological. They're not mechanical problems about not having time, although that's often the excuse that people will give themselves. Again.
Yeah, that is my impression too.
Yeah.
It's a psychological phenomenon, but people think they could solve it by, getting an iPhone.
Oh, yes. Or an app.
The latest iPhone.
The latest app.
iPhone 5.
There are so many productivity apps, aren't there? Those quick fix, organize your life things. And that they consume time and they consume cognitive effort. And but on the other hand, if they work for you, that's fine. But how are you going to find the one that's going to work for you? And is that your problem? Is your problem the way that you're organizing things, or is it that you can't organize, because you don't even think about the future? You haven't got a plan. You don't know what your motivation is, or you haven't stopped to think about it, which is the final one, the reflection part.
I've been trying to convince myself that my problem is I'm still using a BlackBerry, but I need to be using a Samsung. You know, the new one, the new big one with the fancy graphics.
Looking at one there, Francis.
We have one. You should use my BlackBerry.
I never got on with BlackBerries. Never. Tried them, but couldn't do them.
Gotcha. And then tell us about evaluation and reflection.
Evaluation is stopping and thinking, how am I doing? So it's taking time out, and that might be, I know the clients that I coach at the moment, they value that the time out that we take for our coaching conversations. That you know, that's time to stop and reflect about how I did, how I'm doing, and what I'm going to do next. And it starts a positive feedback loop into your actions into the future. So you're not, you know, you're learning from the past. You're not just consigning it to history.
And that allows you to continuously improve.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive for people who are busy all the time and think that they should be running around looking busy and looking active. But sometimes just sitting down with a cold towel on your head, thinking for 15 minutes is a good investment in your time.
Yeah. I don't know if you have this problem, but you know, I have participants in my programs, and you know, some of them are very highly trained, who can't spend enough time in the program to actually reflect. They don't reflect on what is being presented there. Instead, they're sending email. You know, they're checking Facebook, and they're doing all these other tasks.
There's a lot of demands being made on us, aren't there? There's a lot of load being made on us, and it's they're self-imposed distractions as well, aren't they? That some of them may be necessary, but it's I think it's fooling ourselves that this is helping us when actually it's not. For things like Facebook and social networks, which I use comprehensively myself, but it's an amazing thing that just devoting 45 minutes to a project once a day for 5 days in a week will save you half a day just by not having any interruptions. Yeah. It's research that was done at Microsoft actually 5 years ago, so it's probably out of date, and people will be interrupted even more now. But they found that people should expect an interruption every 11 minutes. And that would put them back 25 minutes in their work. So the best way to be more productive is eliminate interruptions.
Right.
Stop them all for 45 minutes.
Right. Well, if you're more important, then you get interrupted every 8 minutes.
Cycle. It's really frustrating, isn't it, being interrupted and not being able to get on with things.
Right. Well, some people, unless you like it, you know, some people, they don't thrive in the sense that they're more productive, but they like the jumping around because, you know, they're in demand.
Yeah, it's a ego thing maybe or something, but it's not true productivity.
No, that's what
you want if you're aiming to be productive.
It's something psychological. That takes us right back to where we sort of took the segue, which is, back to that statement you made that time is psychological. Tell us what that means, because you know there's of course the mechanistic Newtonian listeners who are thinking, no, it's not. You know, it's 1 o'clock here in Kingston. It's 1 o'clock. Everyone here is on 1 o'clock time. No, there's nobody on 2 o'clock time. Well, that's not true.
No, it's not true. It's happening here.
Some people were like, it's 1 o'clock already? I thought it was 11. Does that prove your point?
No. Well, time has different qualities. It's and what you're talking about, that time, is only how we measure time. It's not time itself.
Right.
You try waiting in line at the post office, and that time passes very slowly. Whereas if you're watching an absorbing football game, that time can go very quickly, or a rock concert or something like that. So time it's stretchy. It can have different qualities depending on how you're spending it, and you know, whether you're in flow or not, or whether you're waiting for a bus. And so it definitely is psychological. It has different properties according to your situation and indeed what country you live in as well. I bet time's different in Jamaica to what it was in the States when you lived in the States.
Oh yeah. Totally. that, you know, I really resonate with the idea that it's psychological, and in our case, largely cultural, because the psychology is shared.
Yeah.
Absolutely that way. Our relationship to it is just very, very different. And it, you know, we suffer from very low productivity as a result of our particular relationship to it. But it's also the reason why people are flying from England to Jamaica for vacation, yeah, because they want to come to somewhere where they're not being pressured to, you know, have lunch at a particular time, and no one's on them to, you know, you're taking too much time on the beach, and they want to be in an environment where time is not a concern.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
And it's easier to do that when, you know, if you come to Jamaica than if you stay in England.
Yeah, unless you can change that state of mind, which is easier to do, shifting from one country to another and one culture to another.
Easier to pay a plane fare than it is to undergo a psychological shift.
Well, it depends. Trouble is, you have to come back from holiday, don't you? And you don't have to come back from your psychological shift.
That's right, right, right. That's a permanent versus temporary. Yeah. So tell me something. In your work then, do you seek to alter your client's experience of time?
That sounds very highfalutin, doesn't it? But yeah, it's to change the way that they think about time.
Thinking then would lead to the experience.
Yes.
Is the experience the goal, or is thinking the goal?
It's experience.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. I noticed that somewhere on your site there was a mention of time anxiety. And then I imagine that as you're working with them, their time anxiety would actually be reduced.
Yeah, and that's something we measure using this profiling tool as well. We can do it before and after. So see, you know, whether that anxiety has decreased as people report. And it does, because... Yeah, they're operating in a different environment now, where time doesn't become the enemy.
Hmm. But now tell me yourself, back to fooling yourself. Is it possible to change your experience of time, but still be late to everything, late deliverables, unreliable? Because all you've done is like fool yourself into, you know, you played a psychological Jedi mind trick where you think everything is great, but in fact, over here in the measurable social reality, nothing has changed.
No, if you set off possible? To, if your goal was to turn up to meetings on time and you're not, then you haven't changed. As far as I'm concerned, it's not a mind trick. It is about the, you know, well, it's what you did. You set out to do what you did. Did you achieve what you set out to do? It's very practical and pragmatic what we do. It's not a, you know, it sounds like it's all psychological mind tricks, but it's about giving people practical exercises to do.
And I think what you might also say is that as you reflect on the reality of arriving late, that it does affect your experience at some point. You don't arrive late forever and get off scot-free. You're either you regulate your own self, or someone else does the regulating for you.
Unless you're the boss and everyone has to put up with it. But yeah, that's another story.
Well, but even then, you still have clients.
Yeah, that's.
You still have taxes to pay. You still have a spouse or kids. You have people around you who won't lie to you. Well, maybe you don't.
No, you're right. There will be some people who won't lie to you, and will just get, you know, browned off that you're always late for things. People get reputations for being late then.
Right, and they change their behavior accordingly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no, don't invite Tony. He'll never get here on time.
Well, tell him it starts half an hour earlier than it does.
You guys do that too, huh? Tony, tell us about the program you have for teens. It sounds fascinating. Time Management for Teens, is that what it's called?
Time Management for Teens, yeah. So I blog on the website called Time Management for Teens, and the idea is that this is the other thing about time management. It's always seen as an individual's problem. It's never seen as a team problem or even a systemic problem.
Mm.
And it's always a systemic problem. So the solution must also be systemic. It must be solvable within a team, rather than at the individual level. Although the individual can, you know, make changes themselves, there's a limit to what they can do. So it comes from that, really, from a systems point of view, rather than just personal development.
Well, that's fascinating. You know, I believe it or not, I'm writing a paper on that very, very idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm actually presenting at the conference, a project management conference coming up in Trinidad. And I'm part of what I'm seeing is that with good, and I wish I had known more about your tool, because I do mention a couple of tools. Actually, I might slip you in there anyway, but anyway, we'll see. My idea is, thesis is that when a team, a project management project team, knows the skills of everyone else, everyone knows everyone else, and it's totally transparent about your strengths, weaknesses, styles, preferences, whatever you might say.
Yeah.
Then you can adjust accordingly, and certain ineffective behaviors sort of naturally drop away because of the social pressure. And if you're the project manager, you can intervene in a team and have it work better than before, just because people have more knowledge. Does this resonate with what you're doing at all?
Absolutely, yeah. That's how it works with teams. It goes back to that self-knowledge and knowledge about your colleagues and your colleagues' knowledge about themselves, you know, and how much is now open and revealed to everybody and made explicit. And they stop being blind spots then. They become things that you can acknowledge and talk about, and not just have to accept.
Very interesting. Well, I'd love to hear more about that. And you said there's a whole blog. Can you give us the address? Is it?
Yeah, that's
ready for us to go look over and
there's
add comments and the whole thing.
Plenty of stuff on there, and you know, please subscribe, and we'll add you. And so I blog weekly. It's called timemanagementforteams.com.
Time management for teams. That the whole long.
Yeah, one long.
The whole sentence.
One long word. Yeah.
.com.
Mm-hmm. And we've got.
How can you be reached otherwise?
Oh, the usual things. Twitter, we're at Time Intel on Twitter. That's TimeIntell. LinkedIn, Time Diagnostics. You can go and do the profiling thing on a different website. We've kind of got too many websites at the moment. We're trying to fix that. That website's called Time Intelligence. .co.uk. But if you go on the Time Management for Teams one, that you can also go to there and do that. That report will give you a 9-page printout of what your strengths and weaknesses are.
Okay, and if you're let me ask the question: is there a charge to get in at the moment, or is it?
It costs £30 to do, so it's not particularly expensive.
Okay. Yeah, okay, that's great.
You know, if there's large groups of people who want to do it, then we can always cut a deal.
Great. And for those of us who are time advisors, are you licensing your surveys to other people to use?
Yeah, that's something that we want to get into. We're not currently doing it, but we certainly want to get into it. And associated with that would be a train the trainer type package, which we have the outline, you know, prospectus to do for people. That's definitely something we want to do, and we'll license that out at a much lower rate than the retail rate.
Wow, fascinating. Well, Tony, we're at the top of the hour. I can't believe it
went quickly, didn't it? How time flies.
Oh, the irony. It's because it's psychological.
It's because I enjoyed it.
Oh, Tony Murphy from Time Diagnostics, Time Intelligence. Thanks for being with us here on the Two Time Blog podcast. It's been great having you, Tony. And I look for you on the inner lab.
Inner lab, yes, yeah. Still doing that, yeah. Thank you, Francis. Really appreciate it.
Great. Take care.
Thank you.
And tune in next time for our next release or next broadcast. of the Two Time Labs podcast. It's been great having you here listening in, and until next time, this is Francis Wade signing off. Bye now.